This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It's an election year, and a new force is trying to exert itself. Relatively new, anyway. Progressives. Our history doctor, Bill Smith, is here. Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
We've heard the term progressive, some people using it to describe themselves a lot. And I think, help me out, more often than not, it's associated with the Democratic Party now.
That is true. That is true in a modern 21st century sense. You see a lot of what once may have been labeled liberal Democrats trying to call themselves progressive Democrats, thinking that somehow using the P word will take the stink off the L word, which has been put on them by the Republicans, trying to make liberal a bad word. I find a little disingenuousness on all sides of the coin here, because if we want to talk about true classic American progressivism, it is something similar to what we may see in today's modern Democratic Party, and perhaps more closely in some of the agenda items of Barack Obama, the current president. But this would be a case of Republicans forgetting that once upon a time they were known as liberals, mm-hmm. back when they were forwarding issues in the mid-1800s, such as abolition. So we have to be careful when we put the capital letters in front of some of these words.
Well, help us. The capital P progressives, who were they?
Well, the original progressives were three of our first four presidents of the 20th century. They called themselves progressives: Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, and Woodrow Wilson. Senators
who
were
all in a row.
Who were all in a row.
And not all of the same party.
No.
Once all against each other.
Actually, yes. They all had the three-way battle of 1912, and really at the end of the day, you have Roosevelt, who becomes the bull moose, Taft, who was always a Republican, and Wilson, who was a Democrat. And right there should tell you something important about capital P progressivism. It was an all-encompassing movement. Everybody believed they were progressives during the latter half of the 19th and the start of the 20th century in America. They were the reformers.
Okay.
So you had progressive Republicans, you had progressive Democrats, you had progressive socialists. Everybody wanted to put progressive with their political affiliation.
Okay. Were there, you mentioned those three presidents, others that would fit into the capital P progressives?
Well, you know, again, you'd have names like Henry Cabot Lodge, mm-hmm. as a young senator, was really an aggressive reformer. He later became, you know, sort of a staid image of the establishment over time. But Jane Addams of Hull House fame as a reformer would be a progressive and proud to call herself that. Upton Sinclair, you know, as a leading name of the muckraking movement. Mm-hmm. Again, it had to do with reform and what motivated these individuals toward their reform.
Well, what motivated? What did they stand for? What were they about?
Well, I like to express it this way, that classic American progressivism can be defined by 6 points.
All right.
You know, first and foremost, it acted against the effects of industrialism.
Still a relatively new phenomenon. Relatively new.
Correct. You'll see this at that time in labor movements and reforms for safety spawned by things like the horror of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. Mm-hmm. Now, in many ways, if you want to take progressivism and move it forward in the 21st century, you can certainly see a certain amount of that in our current American political landscape, in which you have political forces seeking to work, maybe not against industrialism, but perhaps against globalism.
Mm-hmm.
So on that first point, perhaps you can find some equality between the movements. The second one is that there is a fundamental optimism about progress that was a part of progressivism. You mentioned the industrial age rise. I mean, think about that, the great massive plants in America, the spread of the rail system, the growth of the city,
nothing
the vertical growth of
right.
the city. Yes. You know, so it's a time in which America is rising. So that fundamental optimism driving the progressivism, if they could investigate and learn about a problem, the progressives had faith they could fix the problem. And I'm using the word faith carefully as a choice there. Look at the work of Sinclair, perhaps the most famous of the muckrakers, mainly because it was inflicted upon later generations of American lit class students. But he shot for one target, got another. He never really intended the jungle to be a motivation for the Pure Food and Drug Act and reforms. He was going after the worker conditions. Just sort of shows that sometimes you aim at one, get another. The The third thing about the progressives is they believed in the need to intervene in people's lives to help them. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you, you know, that old line. They were willing to use the power of the state and the federal government to achieve the changes they believed necessary would be the fourth point. Now, if you want to get all modern-day Republican, very Fox News-ish about it, well, certainly those progressive Democrats would fit that vision of using the federal government. Except, remember, you said it earlier, two Republican presidents in that early run of progressives, this was a time in which people believed it was necessary for the government to intervene. The reason that I said faith is this fifth point. The progressives of the time, the classic ones, were motivated by an evangelical Protestantism that gave them the duty to rid the world of sins, ranging from prostitution to drunkenness, and to improve the environment of the poor, to elevate them up from ignorance and poverty. I think the Ron Paul progressives will have a little bit of a problem with that vision, because they're
That's certainly not
the
libertarian,
other way.
Right.
No, it is not libertarian in any way.
Now, so temperance is part of this.
Absolutely.
And just a side note, because in today's society, Carrie Nation and temperance, people who support the temperance movement are often mocked and joked about, and I will be the first, and you know this, I love to tip a nice brew, so I'm certainly not in favor. But alcohol was a problem for society in the early 20th century.
I don't think it's a stretch of analogy to say alcohol and illegal drugs as analogs between the 20th century and the 21st century in this way. And perhaps if you view Carrie Nation and those women that went around and made their very dramatic protests at times in favor of the temperance movement, which of course led to the Prohibition Amendment 18. I'm trying to pull that one off the head of my head. Also leads to the 21st
right.
as we get rid of it. You know, the situation with the progressives was such that they were the reformers. They believed that this was what they had to do to reform America. That's why when people want to throw progressive on some groups sort of willy-nilly, I'm amused at that fact that if you walked over to, again, some of the younger supporters of a libertarian candidate like a Ron Paul, or perhaps some of those that have backed Barack Obama as well, and say, oh, by the way, you want to see the government out of these parts of your lives, well, do you understand that's not really being true to the progressive, I'm here to help you, and I am motivated by my faith to help you.
What did the progressives, the capital P progressives, actually do?
Well, you know, they did do many things, and they did change America. The breaking up of the major trusts and the elimination of what were known as interlocking directorates. Really, you know, we would both sit on the boards of our respective corporations and then collude in certain ways to either limit markets or restrict labor. The way that they dominated the economy had to be addressed, and only the federal government could do it. Going after monopoly in that way turned out to be a good thing. Conserving vast parts of the American landscape, literally, through the park system and the national forests and stewarding some of our natural resources, particularly out west, because the progressives were also motivated by what they had seen on the East Coast in the way of industrialism and the mowing down of many of the old-growth forests east of the Mississippi River. They were determined to not have that happen west of the Mississippi River so that for future generations, and we now benefit from it, you know, would have the opportunity to walk through a Yosemite National Park. They did establish things like the pure food and drug laws and labeling of medicines that today we could scarcely imagine an America in which we didn't have a certain amount of regulation in place. These were some of the positive things that were left to us by the progressives.
It would be really interesting to have the president, Governor Romney, Newt Gingrich, Senator Santorum, and some others sit down and have a civil discussion. I said it would be about what they think the legacy of those progressives is and was and how it should or shouldn't be enacted a century later.
You're right. And I think when we think about our history, and that's one of the main things we want people to do out of this series, is when you go back and study and relive what happened during that time frame, it's not unlike Richard Nixon. If you say Richard Nixon to most Americans, they have a very visceral reaction But if you break down what he actually did,
the EPA,
in many ways, kind of an echo of that progressive
endangered
period.
Endangered animals.
Pure. You have the EPA. You have the Clean Air Act. Title IX, being several of the reforms that come under Richard Nixon, he's not perhaps the president you thought he was.
So are you saying that history is not black and white and we can't in one sentence describe someone from our past?
I believe that's what we've been spending the past several years stamping out
yes.
right here.
And until we've stamped that out,
we're history.